Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teaches us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Wisdom of God. The wisdom of man says we can earn God's favor through good works, but the wisdom of God is made known in Jesus Christ, God in human flesh, put to death on the cross to grant us forgiveness we cannot earn. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Brought my own, Jimmy. This is Wretched Radio. Hoping you'll send wretched things to idea@wretched.org. Don't forget you can text away to 877-282-2337. Chances are you won't be able to say everything you want to because, well, it's texting and our thumbs, they get tired, don't they? 1 Peter 5, Peter writes, I write these things to you briefly. Briefly? Briefly? No. We text briefly. You wrote 2,500 words, Peter. Apparently his definition and ours a wee bit different, or our attention spans are a whole lot shorter. You can text whatever you want, 877-282-2337. Jimmy, I received this one, and I'm gonna read it, but I'm not going to respond to it because I find this question to be... And I don't mean this to reflect on the young man who wrote it in. It's very startling to me because in my estimation, it indicates, whoa, we're living in a different world. This to me is one of those very tangible occurrences, instances where it's like, okay, all right, I think that I need to have a little bit of sympathy, empathy toward a younger generation because customs have changed. Dynamics have changed. How we grow up with so many unspoken things that affect us, they've changed. One of the examples, this one, if it's sounding a little cryptic, will hopefully bring some clarity. I remember it wasn't that long ago here on Wretched Radio. We were discussing the difference, of course, in generations, and this is an observation we've all made, that basically the younger generation is a stay inside of the house generation. This current generation is also a pretty much everything is available that I need on my cell phone, and I find my free time consumed with electronics, whether it's gaming, whether it's phones. Now, that's different than the way people of a different generation grew up. You were outside people. You went out and played. Furthermore, you would get bored. With electronics, you never get bored. You can always just go onto your phone and swipe away and find something that amuses you. Well, we didn't have those things in a different era, so you had to make up stuff. So you had to be more interactive with other people. You had to be bored. You had to create stuff to keep yourself from being bored. And that is not typically the case with the younger generation. Now, this isn't a commentary on who's better, who's worse. It's just different. It's different. And those things actually impact the way that we behave, the way that we think. This question, I think, adds to that, whoa, it's different feeling that I got. Let me read to you this email. Jimmy, tell me if this strikes you as, I don't want to use the word profound because it makes it sound like that there's some sort of like intellectual heft behind it. But it's like, okay, this is different. This younger generation definitely grew up differently because this is a question that is one that I never considered growing up. And that is not a critique of the young man who wrote this email. It's a critique that things are different. Here's the question. When it comes to dating and marriage, where do I start? What do I ask someone? How do I approach someone at a store or restaurant to ask them out? And how should I prepare myself for marriage? Jimmy, that question was like an Acme anvil to the head. It's like, boing, what? Wow. I never asked these questions. Now, maybe I'm a knucklehead, but did you ever have any of these sorts of talks with your dad or older men about how to approach a girl? How to ask them out?
I don't think specifically, no, I don't think I had specific interactions like that. No, I didn't.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's just this fellow's situation. I don't know.
No, I will say this, at least for my, and of course, this would take more digging into, but I think it's where we are today. I think this generation, younger people have confidence issues, and it's got something to do with social media and not having more face-to-face interactions.
Okay, I'm inclined to agree with that, but it doesn't mean that they have no face-to-face interactions. You know, if they go to school, they're with kids all day. So I'm hearing you, but I'm simultaneously wondering. It's not like they're living under a rock.
No,
they're with family, and they go out to places and restaurants and what have you. Okay, you know what though? Okay, hold on. Do you remember? It was, I don't know, a number of months ago when we were reading about Gen Z, I believe, going to restaurants, like it terrifies 80% of them. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And furthermore, even more, they won't go to a restaurant for fear of making a mistake when they're ordering and being embarrassed, or going to a restaurant, ordering something with some people, other people, and their order wasn't as good as what everybody else got. Therefore, they don't go to restaurants. Okay, so that would be some, and that was a little bit more scientific than anecdotal, if I recall. So that would support your theory, Jimmy, that maybe this is a generation that it's hard for them to just, I just never thought about it. Yeah. If you wanted to approach somebody, just approach them. Maybe that is a part of it. That maybe a place for this young man to start is confidence. Now, how do you get that?
Confidence and initiative are both parts of
that's
biblical manhood.
Boy, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Boy, that time off did you well. Those are both excellent thoughts.
Did a lot of reading.
Yeah. I bet you did. Between your oxy trips.
I don't remember much of it. But.
Initiative is another thing that simply hasn't been expected. See, those are the soft informers. These are the things that shape a boy or girl. Not necessarily stuff that mom and dad taught or didn't teach, but just that they didn't have to do the same stuff. That forms an individual. When you grow up in a home and you don't have to fix anything, lift anything, do anything, struggle with anything, that shapes you. And so maybe the idea of, whoa, approaching a goyel, that's like climbing a mountain. I don't do those things. Maybe that is a part of it. So that, Jimmy, I'm not prepared to answer this question.
Yeah. Like I said before, I think it's going to take some more digging into and some more research and thought. But I would offer something that you mention all the time. But this is a situation where I think, at least on the surface, it's so vital to have those older relationships with those older men in your church. Yep. And in your life.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Jimmy, I'm telling you though, it's good, but it still, I think it goes underneath the surface, because I think if you're with an older man in the congregation and even asking us this question, you know, how do I ask someone out for a date? Well, okay. So left foot, right foot, approach them. Stick out your hand and say, hello, my name is. Okay, you can instruct them, but I think this reveals something more profound. And I think that your two observations go closer to the core of the issue. That there's something internally that perhaps need to be identified and addressed to build that up. And I'm writing this down. Confidence and initiative.
Yeah.
Those are two things. Here's another one. Fear of man. What if she says no? That can be devastating to some people. And all of those, whether it is courage, whether it's initiative, whether it's fear of man, great news, there is a biblical solution to those problems. There is a way to get better at these things. And each of them, quite honestly, I think have to do with our understanding of God and our trust in his sovereignty and how he has made us and how he ordains all things. Because if you're terrified to ask a girl out because she might say no, that's a fear of man problem. What does that indicate is your trust level in God? What does that indicate about your fear level of God? They're both too low in this instance. And so I think, Jimmy, you're taking us down the right path.
Yeah.
These are internal, not just, okay, well, you send a text, you approach her and you ask her for her phone number so you can send her a funny meme. Okay, those are strategies. But I think this has more to do with personhood.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to understand that she might say no, and it's okay if she does.
Right. But how theologically do you rest in that?
Yeah, that's right.
Because your identity isn't found in being affirmed by somebody of the opposite gender who says yes or no when you ask them out on a date. The Christian should always be okay. You pass me over, it's okay. You affirm me, I'm still in the same place. Because my affirmation and my position doesn't come from a human being. My affirmation and position comes from being in Christ. Therefore, it's always secure. It doesn't shake. I can stand firm. I don't have to be told by anybody anything, because what does it matter if the servants despise you or affirm you? Who cares when the king says, "You're mine. I love you." That's what matters. This is Wretched Radio.
Look, I'm going to be straight with you. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. Here's what no one wants to admit. You can't win this fight with willpower. Trust me, if determination alone could break the chains of lust and sin, you would already be free. You've probably figured that out by now. The filters, the accountability apps, the promises to your wife or to yourself, they're just band-aids on a wound that needs surgery. Real freedom, the kind that actually lasts, it only comes when Christ changes you from the inside out. Not just your habits, but your actual heart. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Now, be honest with me for a second. Is your marriage thriving, or is it just surviving? Are you and your spouse building something together, or are you just really trying to get through another week without another major blow up? And Fortis Institute fellow Pastor Brad Bigney hosts a podcast called Thrive, and that's exactly what it's all about. What it looks like for marriages and families to actually flourish instead of just holding it all together. Brad is a pastor, he's a certified biblical counselor, and as I said, a Fortis Institute fellow, and he brings decades of experience to helping real couples work through the real stuff. And this is the kind of Christ-centered content that we're producing every single day here at Fortis Institute, and it's only made possible because of our gospel partners. And if our ministry has helped you in any type of way, we would love it if you would prayerfully consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Help us reach more families with the truth of God's word. You can find out how right now at fortisinstitute.org. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. Trust the science. You've heard it a million times, usually right before someone uses it to shut a conversation down instead of open one up. But science is a tool. It's not a judge. And like any tool, it depends on who's holding it than what they already believe. Think about it. Two scientists can look at the exact same data and walk away with opposite conclusions because each one brought a different worldview to the table. Science also leans on a few things it can't prove: that the universe stays orderly and that our minds can actually grasp truth. Both make the most sense if a rational God made it all. You take him out of the picture and you're left trusting that chaos somehow adds up. That's where In the Beginning with Dr. Jason Lyle comes in. He's a PhD astrophysicist. He'll teach you to read the science headlines without getting played. New episodes of In the Beginning are dropped every single Wednesday on every single podcast platform in existence or at fortisplus.org.
Important dates in Christian history. 529 AD. Benedict of Nursia establishes his monastic order outside of Rome. His written code of conduct, called the Benedictine Rule, becomes the most influential guide for centuries of monasticism in the West. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The king called up his jet fighters. He said, "You better earn your pay. Drop your bombs between the minarets down the Casbah way." And as soon as the sheriff was chauffeured out of there, the jet pilots tuned to the cockpit radio blare. As soon as the sheriff was out of their hair, the jet pilots wailed, "The sheriff don't like it. Dun, 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 dun. This is Wretched Radio." They don't write them like that anymore, do they? Isn't that funny? We hear them like the Taylor Swift music and we go, "Oh, that's so dreadful." We sang along to Rock the Casbah. Okay, I don't think we got bragging rights. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Wyatt. "Todd, if a man has a besetting sin of porn, does that disqualify him from being an elder? Say he does well for a while, but then 2 years later falls again and the pattern repeats multiple times."
Wow, that's an extended sort of affair. Until you got to the he fell, you know, every 2 years, if that's what we're actually dealing with. And by the way, just as a rule, this is just a rule, not saying it's perfect, not a law, just saying, if I ask a man, "How often are you looking at porn?" and he says, "Well, you know, not that often." Well, try to be specific for me. Like a couple times a month. In my mind, I go, okay, that's like 4 times a week, because they just rarely is a man forthcoming with the specifics of the amount of pornography that they're consuming. That's not a law, just an observation. I've never had a guy argue with me, so I've done this plenty of times. "So how often do you look at porn?" "Oh, you know, like once a week." "So what you really mean is once a day?" "Yeah, once a day." Because it's a shameful thing. So do with that as you will with the 2 year pattern. Is a man qualified to be an elder if he's watching porn? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You're just not. If you do not have yourself under control at that level, you simply are not qualified. It doesn't mean necessarily that you're not a Christian, but it does mean that you simply don't meet those qualifications. Does that mean you can never be qualified? Oh, I think you could be qualified, but it would have to be a super long season of zero verifiable porn consumption. Otherwise, I would say that until that's dealt with, it shouldn't even be considered. Now, you got somebody, let's say, who is an elder, and they're saying that it's been discovered that they do watch porn, but it's once every 2 years. If I were sitting in that meeting, I think that without sounding callous about it, I would have to say, I think it would be do you well to step aside. Need to step aside. We need to get it totally under control, because this isn't like on occasion you have a flare up and you maybe yell at the kids. This is a different level. This is a different thing. This is sexual sin. Sexual sin is deeper. It's more profound. It has more implications. It affects the individual more than any other sin. And so I would say, if I were in that meeting, while I'm glad that the individual is making progress, I'm glad that the individual has victory for 2 whole years, because of the high bar of the qualifications of an elder, I think that we would have to say, well, let's deal with this. And then we can address it in a number of years after this, if you've had complete victory. And I say that not because we've got a Bible verse that says a man can't have looked at pornography for 18 months without being qualified for what it. We don't have that. But what do we see with the qualifications of an elder? Here's a way to read your Bible that will perhaps ignite your interest in it. If you're going through one of those seasons, there's so many ways to read the Bible that like are fresh and exciting. Try this. Go to 1 Timothy 2, 1 Timothy 3. Go to Titus 1 and identify, read those chapters and list all of the qualifications for an elder. List them. When I did that somewhat recently, I think there were 24 qualifications. 24. What does that, without even knowing what they are, what does that scream? Qualified. You must be qualified. The bar is high. This is an office of distinction. This is an office of dignity and responsibility. We're dealing with people's souls here. And if you don't have yourself under control, well, then you shouldn't be trying to help others do likewise, because you're not fit yet. And so for those reasons, I would say I think that the fellow should be stepping aside. Jimmy, what say you?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, there again, several qualifications, but self-control is, I mean, you've got to have it. If you don't have it, then you can't lead the sheep.
All right, so let me just push back, though, okay? So you're telling me, Jimmy, that you're perfect?
No. We all sin, but if we sin in a way that shows a pattern like this, then you're definitely not under any type of self-control.
You know, maybe this will help bring some clarity, because somebody could make the argument, so if an elder tells a lie, he's not qualified to be, well, it would probably depend on the lie. If he was lying about finances and he swindled a bunch of money from the church, well, I would say he's disqualified. But point taken, but I would respond and say this. Do you think that a man can be an elder if he only murders somebody every 2 years? You'd go, whoa, but of course not. Well, why? Because we recognize it's a different type of sin. It's more profound. It's more grievous. And I think that is true with pornography. Would you say that a man, he only has an affair on his wife every 2 years? He only beats his kids every 24 months. Had a lot of victory, though. You'd go, no. I fear that all of us in some way are less disgusted by pornography than we should be. It's a part of our vernacular. We just talk about it. Oh, so that boy at church, he watches porn. Mm-hmm. Are you bringing a casserole this Sunday? It's like nothing to, we're baked in it. And it should be more shocking that it is. And so to the individual who wrote in, that's my 2 cents. Have you got 2 cents? Please offer it by sending it to idea@wretched.org, or you can text your 2 cents to 877-282-2337.
Yeah, this is a text from Anonymous. Todd, with each person interpreting the Bible in a different way, how do we know who's actually correct in their reading and understanding of the Bible?
Not sure I buy the premise. Do we have some differences on some interpretations? Sure, of course we do. It's a big book. Overall, though, we agree on most stuff, at least within the realm of small O orthodoxy. So how do you know who's telling the truth? Well, Martin Luther would say, that's up to you to sort. That's your job. You're to be a Berean. You hold the keys to the kingdom. This is the priesthood of all believers. You have a responsibility to be the one who determines if this is true or not. How do you do that? By looking at the Bible yourself. Now, ultimately, we're going to, this is a little bit circular in that you're always going to be disagreeing with somebody on something. But don't let that wobble you when it comes to the veracity of the Bible and how we as fallen human beings are able to learn and discern what is true and not. Overall, we agree on stuff. It is some of the nuances, most certainly. And for those who are so wildly divergent in their theology, we have a category for that. Heretics. They're not a part of the church. So don't be wobbled. Because different people have different interpretations on things. And please note, that does not compromise the integrity of the Bible. Those types of conversations happen with every form of literature. That's why you got lit classes, working through different books. And some people believe that Charles Dickens was actually trying to make a commentary on. Other people say that he's. Why? Because, well, we're fallen human beings and we are not in the actual shoes of the original author, although that should certainly be our goal when it comes to reading ancient literature. What did the original author intend for it to say? So don't think that the Bible suddenly is called into question because we sometimes disagree on certain things. And might I suggest, one of the reasons that we disagree on interpretations is because we're disagreeing on hermeneutic, or we're being inconsistent in our hermeneutic. If you're a Christian and you've never studied hermeneutics, I would encourage you to do so. I know it can sound daunting. It doesn't have to be. We have a free course at fortisplus.org. It's 13 lessons long. Believe me, anybody can get it because I taught it. It's not top shelf stuff. It will show you the basic principles of biblical interpretation, because that's typically where we find ourselves diverging in our understanding of a text. We aren't following the same form of hermeneutic, or we're sometimes forgetting principles and rules of hermeneutics, which of course can lead to a different interpretation. But note this too. Put the focus, let this serve not as an instance or a proof that the Bible is not divine. It's merely a reminder that we're fallen. That's all that reminds. When we come up with different understandings of things, the issue isn't God. The issue is us. If you'd like to sharpen up on biblical hermeneutics, it's called Herman Who. It's free at fortisplus.org. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.